A motley band of heroes set sail, bound for a new life in a lonely island outpost. Beneath the waves, the shattered bones of a long-dead civilization. Treasures beyond the dreams of avarice. Dangers beyond the realm of nightmares. A tale 10,000 years in the making. This is the Raiders of the Lost Continent.
Oh, it's a special day here on the podcast. A special day indeed. A day long anticipated by broad swaths of the listenership. Prayed for. Anticipated. Hungrily.
Yeah, there were many offerings were burnt.
Offerings were burnt.
Human sacrifice, I believe, was involved.
Dogs, cats living together in the vain attempt to make it happen. That's right. Matthew's not here.
We've done it!
But worry not.
Yes.
Because there is a second reason to be excited today, and we are welcoming back an old friend whom we have not seen in some time. Ari Rubin is here.
Hello! It is I. Hello, guys. Great to see you, hear you, be a part of this. Wow. Wow.
Man, we go back a long way. Ari wasn't he like the first guest ever? Wasn't he? On Disorganized Play, right? He was like the first guest ever, I thought.
I might be right.
It's just, you were, it's amazing how you...
he was the first guest on this show.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. Fan favorite.
I still remember you coming to Troy's apartment for Disorganized Play.
It was 150 degrees.
It was 150 degrees.
We couldn't put the AC on because it's too loud.
And I remember you pulling out your equipment and speaking about yourself in the third person with wonder at how awesome your audio equipment was. I remember you pulling out and be like, he brought a snake boom? Holy shit. This guy's a pro.
Okay. Yep. To be fair, you guys had terrible equipment back then.
We did. That's, and it was true. All stolen. It was all hot.
Kind of true.
It is really incredible to have. I was part of an early game night. Way, way back in the day, and Joe said, yeah, I think we started a blog, something like that. And to see what it's turned into is really incredible, and I'm so proud and happy for all of you guys.
Thanks, buddy.
It's really amazing. It's really incredible.
I met you at that game night, and then you and I used to hang out and do open mics.
That's right.
And then this took over. I had to stop doing all that stuff. We had some good times.
We really did. Troy and I stopped after a set one night, and we got... Didn't we get... It was cookie dough. It was terrible, terrible, huge amounts, massive amounts of cookie dough. And we were both like, this is terrible.
Well, this happens in New York all the time, where like something becomes crazy hot, and then it's an hour and a half wait to get it. It was the, what was the thing, the cookie or something that everyone was going to, it was a donut, the Cronut. Remember the Cronut craze? Yeah. All right, so this was the next Cronut craze. It was this edible cookie dough. And so we finished a set down in the East Village, and I was like... He was like, what are you doing? You walk in the subway? I'm like, no, I think I'm going to stop and wait in line for this cookie dough. And so he waited with me, and I got like a bunch to bring home to Sam, and he bought it. It's expensive. And he took like two bites and threw it out. He was like, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever eaten.
Cookie dough is not supposed to be eaten in that way.
You're supposed to cook it.
One, you're supposed to cook it, or two, lick it off a spoon, small amounts.
Yeah, don't just eat like giant clumps of it.
You can't just open the Toll House and just go to town.
It's a half pint serving of edible cookie dough.
That's terrible.
It's delicious.
Wrong egg in there. What are you, Rocky?
They do it in a way where I think they cook the egg somehow because it's supposed to be edible, because you couldn't just eat that much raw egg.
Right. Ari's right, though. The best way to eat cookie dough, my mom had one of those old beige
oyster, like beater, like cookie dough mixer things. Mm-hmm. And she would take the
oyster.
Oster, yeah.
Yeah.
And she would take the blender things off and she would hand me just what was left on those. And yep. I would lick the whole thing through until it was done. And it was great.
And that's awesome. And people get overexcited. So it's like, what if you had a whole meal just out of that that you licked off of the thing?
Sorry, that was my dog. Oh. Going crazy.
I thought you had a soundproof booth.
I let the dog in. The dog was crying.
The dog in the booth.
Oh, my God.
What's the point of the booth? Why don't you put a couple screaming kids and a police car in there while you're at it?
Really went to shit. Oh, crap.
You sure you have room for an ambulance in there?
My goodness. My goodness. How unprofessional.
So proud of your booth.
And, he shows up. He shows up in the booth. The fancy equipment and a dog.
We can tell it's Ari's dog because it has excellent timing.
That's right. Well, anyway, yeah, very happy to have you back, Ari. As always, you're always welcome whenever one of us can't make it. Presumably, you're up to speed with our format change here on of Vice and Men. What is your favorite episode of Miami Vice?
I'd say that one where they did the boat, that cigarette boat, just like woo. Yeah, I don't really.
This isn't working. Let's just go back to the RPG stuff.
I wasn't a huge fan of the show.
It was a mistake. I take full responsibility.
A Vice and Men, though, is a good title for a Vice spot.
Been thinking about this Miami Vice fan podcast for a long time.
I have reams and reams of research that are useless now.
Wow.
I'm going to throw them in the incinerator.
Yeah, well, there was a comment on the subreddit a few weeks back when we were talking about this. There is a podcast for a show called Hooked on TJ Hooker.
Oh. That, okay.
So you could make pods about defunct 80s shows.
I would rather listen to a podcast about Miami Vice than TJ Hooker.
Well, sure.
One, for sure, but
anyway. TJ Hooker is Shatner, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just love Skid when you brought it up. And you were like, there is no Miami Vice fan podcast on the market, nor any demand for one. So I think it's time we get into that business.
You have to create the demand.
Like the way you said it was so perfect.
Well, anyway, the four of you, not including whoever Ari is playing, are standing inside this ancient observatory, and Azura, you have been crawling through the machinery of this thing, trying to get a better idea of what makes it tick. And the last we left you, you just spotted under a panel, you saw this glowing Ioun stone enmeshed in the circuitry of this thing.
Amazing.
What do you do?
She looks at it with awe and slowly reaches out to touch it.
Okay. And you can feel it's almost like a balloon that's been rubbed on carpeting for like 20 minutes. Like you can feel that static electricity type energy coming off of it.
Oh, I love it.
Your hair probably stands up, you know, as you get your fingers closer to it. But it's definitely intricately enmeshed in the machinery of this thing. It would take a certain amount of skill to get it free if that's what you wanted to do.
Okay. Can you refresh my memory on why I'm looking for this or anything like this? Is this the memory banks of the actual observatory, almost like downloaded information
kind of?
Is it powering the observatory?
No, it seems to be the memory banks, like all the data that it collected. It seems like from your knowledge of clockwork machinery, you would surmise that all the data collected is stored in this gem.
Okay.
So you don't you were already basically able to learn everything that's stored in the gem. You were able to like look through the data. You saw that this observatory, whoever was working, was able to correctly predict Earthfall and the fall of the Aslanti Empire. You saw that there is a terrestrial site off to the southwest called the Pillars of Long Shadows that seems to be used as a reference point. You know where that is. And that's basically it. But that's you were able to learn all of that. So this so you're just faced with this Ioun stone.
And ideally, if I was to get it out, we could carry all of this information with us. If
sure.
we could put it in somewhere else to access it again. And okay,
mm-hmm.
interesting. So I love that Azor is finding this because like computers and all that. The way that it all works, like, would not be baffling to her at all. You know, she just doesn't know how this archaic sort of stuff would work, but it makes a lot of sense to her to take this mobile form of all this data and then try to take it somewhere else to load it in.
Yeah.
But she also imagines it'll be very delicate because Ioun stones can break pretty mm-hmm. easily. So, what does she think is the best way to go about it? Like, does she need tools to do it?
Yeah, it would be a disabled device check.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I got the vest of escape.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Little bonus to my disable device.
The device.
Okay, so first she's going to tell everybody what's going on. She'll call over Gavo. She's like, Gavo, come here,
hey,
I want to tell you something.
Hey, what's going on? I heard my name.
This device, it's very important. We need to pull this out of here very carefully.
Hey, forget about it. I can do things carefully. Yo.
Yep.
Thank you for all your help, Gavo.
Sure.
She'll do a disabled device check.
Here we okay.
go. Sure. Sure. Sure.
So much better. Oh, man.
That is a... I hope this is right. 27.
Okay.
Sorry, 28.
Okay, all right. You definitely and barely are able to work this thing free.
Oof.
Like a bomb diffuser, and you, like, able to pluck it out. And Gavin says,
whoa, that was crazy. I saw that coming from a mile away. Oh!
So now you have this Ioun stone. So you have this item that contains all this data. You also know that it is an Ioun stone, and
yes.
as such could be used to trade for more magical devices from the automatons, the Weirwoods.
Could I do an appraise roll just to see if it would
sure.
be more valuable than other ones we've turned in, just to get a gauge? That is a 15 appraise.
This thing is super super rare, and you would think that with all the sort of information that it's able to hold within it, it would be worth probably about 5,000 gold.
Whoa. Okay.
Meaning it would be worth about 10,000 to the Weirwoods.
Wow, right. That's right. They double it. So we could
record that info in a notebook and cash in.
Yep, totally. Totally.
Holy shit, yeah, 10,000 gold. We could all get the... a boost to one of our ability scores.
True. But then, again, you also... this is... you're discovering new things here all the time, and you don't know if it might have some... it might be useful somewhere down the line, too.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so, I kind of want to go to, like, the pillars and the Garden of Lights, all that kind of stuff, before we go sell it, just to see if there's any slots anywhere or anything like that.
Sure.
She will... she'll hold on to it. So she'll,
okay.
she'll pocket it.
Okay. So you guys suffered some pretty serious damage from this haunt that manifested and brought down these fiery meteors into this building. So, and it is now nighttime.
Ooh.
You arrived here at sunset. Now with all your work and everything, it's probably about 10 p.m.
So do you want to rest up here? Do we think that... do we know...
to?
Didn't we, like, reason that the trap would maybe reset in, like, 24 hours or something like that? The illusion?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm at full HP with no spells spent, so I don't know if we need a mechanical rest. It might just be the thing that we don't want to adventure at night.
Yeah, I appear to be at full HP with all my spells intact, so maybe we did rest.
I appear unharmed as well. I don't remember, though. Some people got stuck in the eruption of meteor as
it
came.
Was it only Gavo? I know I was outside when it went down.
Yeah. I burned all my channels.
Okay.
Healing us from that.
Okay.
So that would be the only reason to rest.
Gotcha. I think we should just rest. I think we should rest anyway because we don't want to move at night. We can't see at night, and we know those things that I believe are on the far end of the island and not close to us right now. We know that they're powerful at night. In the hollow
the
forest.
The rays in the hollow forest. Yeah, you know that they are only dangerous at night, and they're quite dangerous.
All right. Let's hole up here for the night.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wait till sunrise.
So you guys set a watch, presumably?
Yes.
All right. So
no, Gavo stays up all night.
Okay, yeah. Gavo stays up all night.
That's good.
And he's at when the first rays of dawn appear through the hole in the roof and the doorway, you might wake up and you see Gavo kind of rubbing his fingers along the scar that he took to his head down in the laboratory when he was knocked unconscious. And he's like, "It's so weird. My head hurts so bad. It's just like that last time. Oh, wait, there's somebody coming." And Gavo collapses. He falls down and he's motionless. He's just kind of letting out like a low moan. And yeah, so he said there's somebody coming and he collapsed.
All right, Azura will go to him first just to see if there's she's not very good at this, but a 16 heal check just to see if he's like stable and unconscious. Is that like what seems to be happening?
He's conscious. He's just like, "Oh God, it hurts so much. I can't see. Who is that talking to me?"
And it seems like cluster headaches. Is what he's going through. So, like, you can, you, Azura, like, from that, your healing experience, you would know, like, there, he is basically not going to be able to do anything remotely helpful while this is going on. Like, the pain is so intense. And it seemed, and he was rubbing, like, this guy. You think, like, maybe this might be a delayed result of any kind of damage that he sustained from his head injury.
Yeah, his concussion.
As a true healer, the colonel will come over and put his hand on Azura's shoulder and just shake his head. "He's too far gone, Azura. We should just put him out of his misery." "I've seen this on the field of battle. He would be best off not suffering any longer."
She turns. "Well, Colonel, you would know best." And she stands up, walks away. She hands the colonel a dagger.
"I take my flail instead. I put up my hand. No, thank you." And I just
crush his head in.
That's how he would have wanted to go.
Drakeus is still sleeping.
What a thing to wake up to.
Smells the brains coming out of Gavo's skull, like hot Folgers coming out of a coffee pot.
Breakfast time.
But Azura will think, you know, maybe this weird cluster headache situation was giving him a super acute senses or something like that. So she will, she'll look around. She'll go outside because he said someone was coming.
Yeah, and you don't need super acute senses. You see someone walking towards your location along the ridge, back the path that you took to get here, along that path. Ari, who do they see?
Well, that would be Hedley. Hedley Naran.
Oh, Naran. That's right, I gotta write that down. I keep thinking Ornelos, but that's that was another campaign.
So yeah, Hedley, you see Naran. Hedley coming, following your tracks down all the way down to the observatory where he joins you.
"I found you! I have found you!"
"Hedley?"
"Ah, it is I. Yes, hello, hello, hello." "It is I. You might be wondering, wait a minute, I thought good old Hedley had run off with that fish gal all those days ago. Weeks, months, years, maybe."
"Weeks."
"Weeks ago, yes. And it is true.
I did fall in love with that wonderful fish woman. I called her Tanya. We had a special, special kind of love. However, after many moons of making deep, passionate love to my wonderful fish wife, she started to see me as less than, not earning my keep, if you will. I said, there's only one way for me to prove myself to be the man you once fell in love with. I shall meet up with my old compatriots. Start to get back in the field of battle. Have some adventures. She agreed. A bit too much agreement, if you ask me. Yes, I swam back to the colony of Telemundo's Bounty.
Telemundo's Bounty.
But I was told that the party had set out for another island, and they also informed me that the colony had been infiltrated by a bunch of shape-shifting, faceless stalkers walkabout bunch. But they said the heroes had managed to drive them out. I said, sounds like my team. So I swam yet again, using the skills that my dear Tanya had taught me. I swam to the island we stand upon now. I see this fortress made of broken ships. And yes, I saw those automatons. Automatons! That they call home. And at first, yes, they thought me to be a shape changer. But I proved them wrong. As I went into the 19-step process of Lakatha lovemaking. Obviously, I must be a man. They pointed me in this direction, and here I stand in front of my old friends. You look wonderful.
Thank you.
That's usually when you say, oh, Henley, you look wonderful as well.
Yes, I was just about to say, your fitness level is staggering. To have swum among islands like that as if it was nothing.
Well, she's lost in just looking at your calf and arm muscles.
Henley probably does look amazing. Like, he's been swimming nonstop and eating nothing but fish for the past several weeks.
Straight up Olympian. Like, no question
like
about it.
Like Michael Phelps.
Yes, I am fit. And yes, I am a bit pruny.
Henley, quickly, come inside. Come in here. We have found some interesting things, and Gavo is unwell. Please, follow me.
And I shall take you inside, and you can do the whole monologue again.
I caught the evening performance, but I can't wait to see it.
Wait, are you saying that only one of you heard that? I thought the door was open.
I went back to bed. Street crush Gabba's skull. I got to sleep that off.
Whoops. Yes, well, it is good to see you, my friends. I hope to be helpful in your current mission.
Yes, thank you, Henley, for going through all this trouble to find us. We could certainly use your help. There are a lot of unknown dangers, perhaps, on the island, things we have not yet explored. We need to delve down to the southern reaches of the island and do some exploring, and I'm afraid, at least for today, Gavo might be out of the running for that. Colonel,
do you
agree?
I feel so weird. I can't move.
Yes, he's rarely useful to us when he's 100%. Now he would truly be a hindrance. It is fated for Henley to be here at this moment, for we have found traveling with four is best.
Yes. It moves things along well.
Hedley, I missed you so much, my friend.
Yes, you seem a bit ill.
I don't feel so hot.
And he sort of starts throwing up. Now, by the way, so you guys are readily accepting that this is the Hedley you know.
Right.
That's right. I mean, we should
be
more.
Dealing with all these shapeshifters and this guy, like he shows up with this tall tale.
No shapeshifter could be this good.
Yeah, that's Hedley.
You might be thinking, oh, he might be a shapeshifter. But let me tell you the 19-step process of making love to Lakatha Bride. Step one, check the gills.
Dracius was incapacitated when Hedley came on, right? Or was he...
Yeah.
That was like during a grand absence.
I believe it was Matthew.
I think
absence.
It was. Yeah, I think it was Gavo the first time.
First
right?
time, yeah. Second time, it was Drakey. Dracius. Wait, you know what? I don't remember exactly. One thing I remember is Dracius and Hedley both being together at the Lokatha camp when Ari and Grant were not playing in the game.
Yeah,
and I remember Hedley was like looking after Dracius, who was like incapacitated.
Right.
And
yeah,
we just sort of said that was happening.
Yeah.
So Dracius not only knows Hedley well from back to the boat, but also Hedley took care of Dracius when he was a little out of it at the Lokatha camp.
Yeah. So you guys have like a particular bond for sure.
I'd like to thank you for instructing me in the 19 steps of Lakatha lovemaking yourself, Hedley. It was what I needed, a salve for the mind when I was at my most desperate. Please allow me to use what I learned from you to protect you in any way I can on this journey.
And Dracius is enacting his very rarely used recently, my word is my bond ability,
once
a day to protect Hedley. So as long as Hedley is in the party, every day he is going to be able to use a saving throw or an attack or something one time to protect him. My word is my bond, Hedley.
I Much appreciate as your that.
Lovemaking is proof of your humanity.
Yeah, the other thing that Azura is thinking is just by logical sort of... It's just very unlikely, unless this skinwalker, whatever, faceless stalker, had been tracking us for a while. There's no way they'd get through the weirwoods. You know what I mean? Like they would just annihilate.
Yeah, you're fairly certain that the weirwoods would not take any chances at all after your experiences with them.
Right, and that's pretty much the only way he could know to come here. You know what I mean? Unless they were tracking us for a long time, but I doubt it. So, I'm pretty confident that we have our man here. Maybe we could use this time. I mean, the sun is just rising. Hedley, have you been swimming through the night, or are you exhausted, or do you have the strength to explore with us today, to adventure?
I have been swimming for quite some time. However, I have eaten lots and lots of fish.
Fish.
A bit too much fish, actually. I'm beginning to only taste fish. I eat a piece of fruit. I taste fish. I eat a vegetable. I taste fish. So I will partake in today's activities, but I have one request. Please, for the love of God, please do not feed me any more fish. I'm a bit sick of it.
Well, we can agree to that. Let's, what do you guys think? I kind of want to go heading south, down from this high height to the lower, to the shore again on the southern end, and look at maybe the Garden of Lights. Is that the closest thing we have, Skin?
Actually, from where you're standing, make a perception check.
Okay. Ooh, 29 for Azura.
So, Azura, from this vantage point, you now knowing where to look, you can see down at the sort of in the southwestern edge of the island near the shore, you can just see the top of what looks like a marble pillar reaching above the trees.
Got it.
So, yeah, so at least you know where the area of the Pillars of Long Shadows are. And then the Weirwoods gave you the location of the Garden of Lights. They put that on your map, which is down further south.
Okay. So great. Let's go to the place of long shadows, or the columns of long shadows first.
Pillars of long shadows.
Pillars of long shadows.
Yeah, let's go there first.
Okay. So you guys, it's mostly downhill and it's mostly clear. So, but it's a little bit of a distance. So it takes you the better part of a day. It's like late afternoon, like wow. 4:30 in the afternoon by the time you finally reach the clearing where these things are. And you notice as you get closer to them, when you catch a glimpse, it's almost like, actually make perception checks.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Ooh, baby.
Ha. Huh.
That is 17.
Well, that'll
22.
Be
22.
Okay. 23 for Azura.
8 for Headley.
Okay.
We got a full rest, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we woke up to kill Gabo.
Yes.
35 for Drakeus.
Oh, wow.
39 against aquatic humanoids. 37 against humans.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, for all of you, see, there's something not quite, there's something doesn't quite add up about the place, like as you get closer to it. Even from a distance, you could see it. And Drakeus, you figure out what it is that puts you a little ill at ease. When you look at it, it looks almost as if there's a cloud passing overhead between the sun and the location. But every time you look, sky is completely clear. And with that in mind, when you look at it from a distance, it's almost like a dome of shrouded dimmer light, like kind of surrounding this thing. And the closer you get, the more clearly you see it. And as you get through the woods into this clearing, you all immediately you all get goosebumps because the temperature is much colder here. The minute that you get within like 100 feet of this area, it's like opening a refrigerator door. Like the moment you get close to this thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Drakeus traces out the shape of it to Azura and says, I have no training in the arcane, but it appears as if there is something interfering with the sun's light in these pillars of long shadows. Perhaps you can examine it, my friend.
Could I do a knowledge arcana?
Sure.
To see if it's under some sort of spell?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yes. 29.
29. So you're not sure what exactly is causing this, but it seems like something about this area or something in the area is siphoning energy, heat and light energy, into itself, making the light dimmer and the temperature colder.
It's like a black hole.
Yeah, yes. So something is like taking in that energy. Why or where it's going, you don't know. But as you get closer, you can see that there are these 7 pillars, and each one is taller and bigger around than the previous one, and they're in a spiral-shaped formation. And on each one of the pillars, there are symbols carved into them, inlaid with some kind of silvery metal, and crystalline lines connecting them. And each one of these pillars is fitted with a ring-shaped metal dial with similar symbols around, like, about, like, neck high. Around each of the pillars, there's this ring-shaped metal dial. And, yeah, it's like the minute you get close enough to this thing, you feel the shadow come. It's like an eclipse. You feel the shadow coming over you, and you get cold. It was, like, 70 degrees walking through the forest. It's like 50 now.
Whoa.
It sucks all light and life if anything gets close to. We must refer to it as the Capita Casa phenomenon.
I've heard of such a phenomenon.
draws happiness into itself and turns it to dust.
It is a thief of joy, as the legends say.
I should have brought a jacket.
I think the ground would be hairier here. Without the sunlight for it to grow, it makes sense.
Can Azura keep walking? Does it feel like the field gets worse as we get deeper, or it's just once you cross that line,
no,
it's pretty...
It's like, yeah, you cross a threshold, and it's just like, boom, temperature goes down, but it stays at about 50 degrees Fahrenheit as you get closer.
Azura's just going to keep walking. Seeing these dials and metallic in nature with crystalline lines and symbols, like she's... Her brain is going nuts right now, thinking that it might be some kind of, you know, engineering, clockworky, puzzly kind of thing. So she wants to walk up and examine it really close, hands on.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you get closer, and yeah, you see all these symbols etched, inlaid, and it's actually beautiful. And like again, it's like a lot of these sites that you've seen, despite its. It's the how old it must be. It's like it's held up extremely well. And the tallest tower, the tallest pillar is, I think, 60 feet tall.
Hmm.
And, yeah.
And they're made of marble?
Yeah, they're made out of marble. And you see these symbols inlaid into them with silver and this crystalline circuitry connecting them and these metal bands along the base of each of them with similar symbols on them. Hmm. So, yeah, you get close and yeah. That's what you see.
Okay. Could I do all right, so they said that these things would have some significance when it came to projecting, like, or foreseeing the apocalypse, right? Like there was some sort of
no. It was the data that you got from the observatory was that this is basically like a fixed point that could be used as reference for calculations.
Got it.
There wasn't any other information about what this place was or its purpose or anything. It was just like this is just like a landmark. For the calculations.
What are the symbols? Do I recognize any of them? Have I seen any of them anywhere else in the island?
Give me another Arcana check.
Okay.
Not history. History wouldn't help.
No, history, no.
Okay. Dungeoneering? Same exact roll, 29. Knowledge Arcana.
Okay. Okay, you notice... Yeah, there's definitely something familiar about these things. And you are able to... You realize that these symbols are all to do with teleportation magic.
Oh, holy shit.
And in fact, Azura, you particularly might recognize that there is a lot of sort of similarities. This is almost like a knockoff of some of the elven teleportation magic, like the Sovereign Gate, mm-hmm. the Ayudara magic. Like, yeah. That's kind of what... It's like someone was trying to mimic that technology, that magical technology. That's what it feels like.
Wow. So it's like... what is it on Avastad? It's like the Seven Gates or something like that? Or the Seven Arches.
Yeah.
Arches is like elven teleportation things on Avastad. A landmark. That's so cool.
Well, and the ancient settlements of Ukulam, and, well, I don't want to ruin another campaign, but we've come across something similar in a different game system, even.
Yeah. Does anyone have geography or planes?
I have geography. Shoot, out of the box. 20.
Ooh. Or actually knowledge sailor, too.
Profession sailor?
Profession sailor.
Well, now we're talking.
21 if it's sailor.
Okay.
Oh God! 19 garbage roll.
I can do a. I can take 20 on a knowledge planes. It's just ability of this archetype, so that would give me a 34 planes.
Okay. So you're looking at these things, and Drakeus and Azura you start spotting individual runes on the pillars and on the bands that are referencing extraterrestrial locations.
Wow.
Like Dami Ariovo, like the different Versace, like the different planets, like in the solar system.
Hmm. Whoa.
What's Headley thinking about all this?
Well, I do have knowledge local. Is there any locals here to, you know, that I could kind of hear things from?
No. Just no. You.
Just me. Yes, it seems I'm getting an eerie vibe from this structure. Something's calling me, telling me I must move forward. This is where we're supposed to be. Actually, it just seems like this would be a great way to prove my manhood to my possibly former wife.
How so?
Adventure is the lubricant to the Levatha. They see that as the ultimate test of a man's manhood.
Yes, it's often cited as the primary aphrodisiac in their cultures. It's why ziplining is so popular as a date amongst the Lakatha.
Headley makes me think of Troy McClure with his predilections for his sea life and everything. It's very Troy McClure. Like, looks like you were wrong when you called him a washed-up deviant, eh, Lori? All right, so if you'll refer to roll 20, the lower left-hand quadrant of the screen.
Yeah, a lot of mileage out of this map.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome.
And let me grab your characters here. So you can see... shit.
Yeah, the map now looks like... Do you guys have any of those picture frames at home with like 10 different pictures from your wedding in it? That's what it looks like if you zoom out on this, because you can see all the different maps in there.
It's a collage.
Yeah.
Gallery wall.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it is. Good gallery wall.
All right. So, yeah, you see... And there's Headley there. All right, so yeah, you see these pillars like in this ring shape, and they have these bands around the base that you haven't really checked out.
Yeah, so she wants to get up and check these bands.
Okay. So it looks like they're some sort of almost ball bearing mount. Hmm. Like it looks like you could swivel these bands around. With the symbols on them.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do they line up? Like, are they this? Do they repeat themselves on each band?
There are different symbols on each band, but there is like a marker on each one that lines up to a different crystalline circuit in the pillar that it's on. So it's like you can dial it up or down or however the system works. Like it seems like that's how you can change it.
Hmm. Seems like a combination lock of sorts, right?
Yeah.
And there's probably like a lot of useless combinations. And if there are a bunch of different symbols on each one, like, you know, there could be 20,000 different combinations of them. So a lot of them might be useless. A lot of them might also accidentally be dangerous, given off of the extraterrestrial location Skid referenced earlier. Be sucked into an actual black hole or something if we're not careful.
The teleportation magic is bringing in an area that is a different climate.
And that's where
ooh. Yeah. Like that's what's happening. I feel like Azura, you're going to be the only one other than just blindly trying to do an arcana check or something.
Yeah. Or engineering or clockwork. I'm not sure exactly what it would be to can we try lining up the rings of each column with like a symbol that matches or something like that. I'm, you know, it's hard to say without looking at it, but
yeah, this thing, it's hard because this is so complex, whatever this system is, it's kind of like the Enigma machine.
Okay.
It's like trying to crack it. I mean, you can mess around with it, like see what happens, but it's trying to figure out exactly how it works would be difficult. Everybody make a perception check.
Okay.
19 for Azura.
32.
Oh, there you go.
15 for Headley.
Okay. Drakeus, you feel, and it's pretty cool here, but all of a sudden you, like, on your arm, you feel this burst of even colder air. And you immediately sense a presence right next to you. You will be able to act in the surprise round as these two creatures appear out of nothingness.
Oh!
Voom.
One's right next to Azura.
Oh, dear.
God damn
roll
it.
Roll for initiative.
Oh, my.
Baby.
Oh, dear. All right. Oh, this better be hot. Oh, no, I'm scared. No. Man, is there anything worse than when you get surprised by a creature popping up right next to you, you roll low initiative. I don't know if it's that low. I have such a high bonus, but it goes surprise, and then again before you get to go. It's just so brutal.
Yeah, it's not fun. Luther, what did you get?
16.
16?
You heard that right, brother.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Azura, what did you get?
Just like the difference between Azura and Colonel Luther, she is slightly less than 15.
Oh, don't say that about you.
You're far less.
I love Azura. I don't say that about her. Drakeus, what did you get?
Much like the number of steps involved in making love to a Lokatha, Drakeus rolled a 19.
Oh, great reference.
How appropriate.
How timely.
And Headley has rolled a 14.
Oh, 14. Wow. We're almost right on the line there.
Right down the line.
Yeesh.
Okay. Okay, so this first creature, like they both these things. Let me actually, let me show you the art here.
Oh no, they're like
so
goblin dogs.
Disgusting.
These things they look sort of like hairless bat creatures. They're on all fours. They have these bulbous yellow eyes and these teeth, and they look like nothing on Earth. They look like nothing any of you have ever seen before.
Yeah, maybe this teleportation is like drawing in something from another planet or just the vacuum of space, and that's what it's so cool.
Yeah,
dude, the drift. It's pulling shit in from the drift.
Yeah. Everybody make a will save.
Jeepers.
Oh, no, wait, not will save. Hold on. I lost the page again.
No, I'll do will.
Okay.
I will not do will. I'll do reflex.
Okay. It is actually... God damn it. Yes, actually, yes. It is a will save. Everybody give me a will save.
Perfect.
Okay. I'm assuming the moon isn't out.
The moon is not up.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Azura.
No.
God. Azura got a 13.
13? Okay.
We'll let you reverse engineer this one. I have a plus 10 to will.
Uh-huh.
And I rolled an 11.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to say 11 for now.
Okay. Okay. Drakeus?
Drakeus feels truly amorous on this day with another 19.
Okay. This is a magic number.
Cannot stop thinking about making love to a Lokatha.
Oh, never do, my friend.
Fighting is the lubricant.
Headley, what did you get for your will save?
Aha, I will win them all with a 2.
I got a 2. No, that can't be right. Can't be right.
What's your will bonus? Will plus.
My will. Oh, it's not a. It's a will save?
Yes.
It's a plus 1.
Wow.
Did you? Here's one. I rolled again, and now I have a 16.
Oh, all right. Okay, we'll go with that. It's actually plus 2 from what I'm looking at. Your will save is plus 2, so that's 17. All right, so Drakius and Hedley, you're unaffected. But out of this creature, you feel the, this like this spherical wave of energy comes out. And it feels like time itself has changed around you. Azura and Colonel Luther are both under the effects of a slow spell. The other two of you are fine.
Okay.
Great.
All right. And let's see here. Okay, so, and Drakius, you can act. You see this, another one of these creatures right, oh no, yeah. The creature that just did this effect is right next to you.
And Drakius doesn't know this is what Colonel Luther hears, but because he's under the effects of a slow spell, he just hears, Colonel, flank it with me. It's a free action, and it's right adjacent to Drakius, so he's going to take his standard action as a single attack with the +2 longsword. That will be a total of a 20 to hit.
That is a hit.
Right. Okay. For a total of almost max damage, 21 points of damage. Ooh,
man. Okay. Very good hit. And it lets out this weird alien otherworldly cry of pain as you stab it. All right. And then the second creature will act, and it is going to bite Azura right next to her, and that is a 27 to hit.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah.
That's 10 points of damage. Ah, with these long needle-like teeth sinking into your flesh.
Oh no.
That was the surprise round. It is now round one. And it is the first creature's turn to act. It is incredibly incensed at Drakius stabbing it, so it turns all of its rage on him. First it bites. That is a 19 to hit.
That is a miss.
Okay. Bites again. Crack die. Misses again. Then it claws at you.
Oh, dear.
That is a natty 19. That is a hit. And 10 points of damage to Drakius. Claws again. 25.
That's a hit. And again, because I acted in the surprise round, I'm not taking my flat-footed, correct? It's my full AC?
Right.
Excellent. Okay.
And another 8 points of damage. And it is Drakius' turn.
Step one, clean the gills. And he slashes out with the elven longsword. Here it comes. Natural fucking 20! Oh,
Jesus Christ. I can't believe the life he lives.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is so ridiculously amazing.
That Let's get the confirmed.
Quite something.
14 on the confirm for a 27.
That's a confirmed critical. That's a confirmed critical.
Jeepers.
Get him. Get him. Oh my gosh. Oh. Just one shot. He's done.
Yeah, this is huge.
All right, let's bring up a juicy crit here from the Naish. Boom. Let's go with Zach from Janesville, Wisconsin. Hello, Zach. Follow up. Your strike leaves the target wide open, and your allies are able to take advantage. Normal damage, and the target is flat-footed until the end of your turn. Any ally that threatens the target... maybe it's into the end of your next turn. Any ally that threatens the target may make a free melee attack. If no ally threatens the target, you may make a free melee attack against the target at your full base attack bonus.
Wow.
So it's just normal damage, and then it provokes from everybody. But oh, and Hedley's there.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, so, I guess technically Hedley's flat-footed. I don't know if you want this crit to absolve him of that. It just says threaten.
It'd be interesting because I got the jump on them. Would I attack twice, or did this jumpstart Hedley, this crit, to where he could act earlier or something?
Yeah, you know, just to get Hedley involved, I'll say that he can take the attack.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll give out my damage first, and then... So that's not as good. That's 16 points of damage.
Okay.
Hedley, after you.
Okay, I received a 26. I am going to smash down upon this guy.
With awesome. With what? What do you use?
With great vengeance.
I
have a short sword.
Short sword, okay.
Short sword.
Great. What's the damage?
The damage is... Okay. Awesome. Wonderful. The damage is 1d6 plus 3.
Actually, that's your offhand. In your main hand, you have a plus 2 gladius.
Nice.
Whoa.
So that's 1d6 plus 4.
Aha. Then I have rolled a 5.
You rolled a 5 on the die.
No, I rolled a 1.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, so that's 5 more points of damage.
5 more points of damage.
All right, nice. So 21 points.
No. Okay. I guess that's fine. I was gonna try to get you to add sneak attack because the creature is flat-footed, but I think it has to be denied its dexterity bonus to AC. I don't think you just get sneak attack if it's flat-footed. I gotta look it up. That's one of those crunchy in-betweeners.
God. Yeah. Man.
I know.
I think if it's flat-footed, you get sneak attack.
Yeah, I mean, when you do a feint, it makes them flat-footed, right?
Right. I'm pretty sure you get your sneak attack if they're flat-footed.
The rogue's attack deals extra damage any time her target would be denied a dexterity bonus to AC, or when the rogue flanks a target. So, are you denied your dexterity bonus to AC?
Well, but that's flat-footed. That's what flat-footed is in Pathfinder, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's not just a minus
Starfinder.
2.
We're used to it in Starfinder, but yeah, it's your that's your dexterity bonus is gone.
Boom. Sneak attack damage.
Sorry, folks. So that's another 4d6.
Dude, that is huge. Yeah. So roll
another 4d6.
Yeah. Another 4d6, yeah.
Okay. 12.
Another 12 points of damage.
Beautiful.
Wow.
As Hedley finds a weak spot in this surprised creature's flank.
All right. That was cool because it was basically... It basically worked out to double damage, but it got Hedley involved.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It got two characters involved, but basically worked out to double damage.
Yeah, that was a good crit.
That was fun.
And now that is all a wonderful prelude to Drakius' second attack. Step 2, stretch the fins. 19, a critical threat.
Oh, yes. My God.
A critical epic threat.
Oh, no.
To confirm at the lower base attack bonus of a 13.
13 is not a confirmed critical.
Even against the flat-footed? No! Okay.
Oh, wait. 13 against flat-footed.
Why is it flat-footed?
Still.
Oh, because of the crit. Right.
Because of the crit.
No, okay. That's still not enough, unfortunately.
Okay, so this will be the penultimate step in my turn. That is 15 points of damage.
Oof.
And Drakius... Due to the physical nature of his Cornigan Smash ability, we'll have a free attempt to intimidate this creature.
Okay.
So I'll roll a intimidate check to demoralize this creature. Let's see if it works. 17 on the die for a 27 intimidate.
What is the target number for that?
It's the wisdom bonus. Plus, like, DC 10 plus your wisdom bonus, I believe.
Pulling it up now.
To demoralize?
10 plus the target's hit dice plus the target's wisdom modifier.
Okay. Right. Okay, so 10 plus... let me just walk through its character sheet here. Okay, that is not enough.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, so you thought you and you thought it's like, man, if this thing was from Earth, maybe it would be scared, but it's not.
Got it.
All right, but still a wonderful round of attacks from you. Wow. And it is Colonel Luther's turn.
Yeah, I know Drakius had yelled out for me to get into flanking, but I only have a standard aura move, so I'm just kind of setting myself up to be squashed without providing any actual offense. So thinking Azura is struggling over there, so I'm going to cast Spiritual Weapon and put it flanking with Azura. A a spiritual heavy flail will appear behind the creature that just attacked Azura.
Okay.
And then I will attack with it.
All right. There we go. All right, roll to hit.
Okay. It's my base attack bonus plus my wisdom modifier, which is great for me. Here we go. Oh, so I got a plus 5 for wisdom, plus 4 for my base attack, plus 2 for flanking, and a natural 1.
Oh, no.
How the hell is this supposed to work?
One could argue it's a magical, it's a spell fail.
Yeah, right.
Is that what you want to do?
I think the situation calls for it.
Nick in Bruges. Bruges, Belgium.
In Bruges.
In Bruges.
In Bruges. I love that film.
Fantastic film. Nick in Bruges. Let's see. Duck, duck, goose. Oh! You should do another magic fumble. I just saw another one that is a little more appropriate, maybe. All right. Duck, duck, goose. As your magic slips from your grasp, an old enemy takes advantage to materialize. A malicious goose summoned one too many times for party tricks appears on your head. If you have a head slot item equipped, it grabs it and flies off. If not, it just leaves you with egg on your face. Dexterity saving throw negates. Do you have a head slot item?
You know, I have a dull gray ion stone.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, it's kind of useless, but yeah.
Pretty meaningless.
The goose grabs it and flies off of it.
All right, yeah, so it's just some weird magical trickery.
I've rolled a natty 19 on the save, so... Get out of here, you fucking goose. Get out of here. Get, leave my dull gray John alone.
Leave my useless stone alone. And get out of here.
All right, so yeah, now I've got this cool little flail up there, and it does nothing.
Okay. Oh, dude, this is so annoying. Oh, there's another one that's great. It's called, I'll just tell you, it's called Colonel's Curse.
Oh.
And I'll just have to bust it out if you fail again one of these days.
But put that one in your pocket.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're not titling this goose game either.
Ooh.
And it is Azura's turn.
Fantastic. Question. You are slowed. You are effectively staggered. Can you take a 5-foot step when you're staggered?
Yeah.
I was going to look that up, and I was like, I don't feel like it. So I just didn't do it.
You know what? You can.
Okay,
that's
fantastic.
That's all you can do, but yes, you can take a 5-foot step.
Azura is going to take a 5-foot step back.
Okay.
Back away from the creature, backing up towards Headley. It is now engaged with the spiritual weapon, and she will cast Haste on the party, which will dispel Slow for the Colonel and her.
Oh, nice
job. So we no longer are slowed, but we're not hasted. Drakeus and Headley, you guys...
Oh, wait, no. Yeah, I was saying you can take a 5-foot step, but that's all you can do.
Oh, I see.
You can't take a 5-foot step and... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think she necessarily needs to dispel it right now. So she is going to cast a different spell, lower level. So if she loses it, it is what it is. So she will cast defensively right now.
Mm-hmm.
Casting defensively, and I got it with a 22. Would have gotten haste 2 by 1. And she's going to cast Vanish on herself.
Oh, okay.
All right. She'll just... vanish this round.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. Boom. Azura vanishes from the battlefield.
Oh, no.
Where'd she go?
I think these things might have blindsight if they look that much like bats. You might be screwed either way. We'll see.
We'll see. Oh, yeah. I didn't even do a knowledge check. I was so... taken in by your explanation that we've never seen creatures like this before. I didn't even try a knowledge check. Can I try a knowledge check?
Sure. Yeah, the knowledge planes.
All right. That would be a 23.
That is... yeah, okay. So you actually do recognize these things as... You know them as Hounds of Tyndalos. These are creatures from the realm of Eldritch. They are they're basically like Lovecraftian horrors.
Dude, and we just fought those chaos beasts in the cave. What is going on this fucking island?
Yeah, so you know that they can make themselves invisible at will, and that they have this sort of teleportation ability. They can also like move between planes.
I think this is a Hound of Tyndalos.
That's what he just said.
Yeah.
There's
a good reason to suspect
my God.
That.
Yeah. How did I fucking miss that? I was just like, this looks like a Hound of Tyndalos. That's too funny. That is my fucking head. I didn't even hear you say that.
So, yeah. And the other thing, so it can move between planes of reality, and it has this teleportation ability, but they're sort of rooted in... This is a very Lovecraftian thing. They're sort of rooted in angles. So... it can teleport, but it has to end up at an angled edge somewhere.
Oh, cool.
It can do it at will. So that's what you know.
Okay.
I can't remember. There's one of the short stories of Lovecraft short stories. There's something like just like that, and I can't remember what it is.
Mm.
All right. It is Headley's turn.
Yes. Okay. I am going to, again, come down on this foul beast with my short sword.
Okay.
I have rolled an 18, and I've got a plus 10, so that's 28.
That is a hit.
Nice. Beautiful. Okay, and I am doing my 1d6 plus 3 for damage. I've rolled a 7.
Okay, 7 points of damage, and then you can attack with your offhand, too, with the sword in your other hand.
Oh, I'm able to do two at the same time?
Because you haven't moved this round, yeah.
Aha. I have rolled a 12. A 12 for 18.
That is a miss.
Oh,
first one hits, second misses.
Wow.
All right. And it is the hound that was menacing Azura. It is its turn. And Azura just vanished. And it also vanishes.
Whoa.
And can we see each other now in the vanish plane?
Can my flail hit it?
Not anymore.
Oh, man.
Damn it, flail.
And then, since folks can't see the map, it was like jammed between Azura and the flail, but it seems like in between the columns it has like space to move out if it needs to, so we're not sure where it is now.
Yeah,
it
could have gotten away. Where it is now. All right, and it is a new round, and it is Hound number 2's turn. It is very badly hurt. Like, you can see it's like stumbling a little bit, bleeding badly, and it vanishes. Boom.
Oh.
Gone.
Wow.
Okay, it is Drakus's turn.
It's vanished. I think out of everything Drakus is capable of doing. Well, that's interesting. But
say, Drakus, hold! I have an idea.
Okay, he hears that from the colonel and he holds in place.
Okay. Okay.
Unassuredly, because that thing got like 5 attacks off on him or something, and he feels very uneasy, but he holds at the colonel's word.
Okay, and it is the colonel's turn.
The colonel has been sitting on this spell for a while and never had a chance to use it. I'm going to cast Invisibility Purge. You surround yourself with a sphere of power with a radius of 5 feet per caster level that negates all forms of invisibility. Anything invisible becomes visible while in the area. So it's going to be a 35-foot sphere around me.
Okay. This wave comes out of the colonel, and it reveals the other hound behind you.
Ooh.
Like at the base of one of the smallest pillar, standing ready to attack.
Oh, that's great, because I don't know if you guys can see the sphere, if only I can see it, but it like... goes around all of the
yeah
colors.
We can see it.
Oh, you can. Okay.
Yeah. So it revealed one hound and Azura, and oh, then
that's true.
The other hound we still don't see though.
Right.
Whoa. Tricky.
So I'm gonna then direct my spiritual weapon just to attack the space diagonally to the north of it.
Okay.
Just for the hell of it.
Okay. And it shatters up against the bark of one of the trees. And that's okay. about all. All right, but nice job, Colonel Luther. And Drakeus, do you wish to go now?
I do wish to go now. Thank you so much for asking. And
oh, I don't want him to go.
That was so creepy and weird. Come on, man.
All right, Drakeus is going to use the full complement of his movement in order to get kind of set up a flanking position. He's setting up a screen in basketball to help Headley maybe flank on the other side if he has the movement. I don't know if he is. But the creature is kind of at a 90-degree angle between Drakeus and one of the pillars. And Drakeus okay. will use a single power attack at this
okay.
time. Will be a 22 to hit.
That is a hit.
Okay. Nice. Beautiful.
Drakeus doles out 20 points
Ooh,
of slashing damage.
Drake? Man, major damage.
Love the
All
Drake.
The time by the Drake.
Hate the Drake.
All right, it is Azura's turn.
Azura will cast... Oh, Drakeus, you dumb bastard! Oh, you're so dumb! Muscle-bound fool! Nope. She can cast haste on you. One creature per level, no two of which can be more right. than 30 feet apart.
Yes.
So
yes.
you don't have to be within 30 feet. You're good. Haste. So Azura and Colonel are no longer slowed, and Headley and Drakeus are hasted.
Boom. Yeah, so Headley, you get an yeah. extra 30 feet of movement and an extra attack and your full bonus.
Oh, wow.
Under the effects of this spell. So, boom, you're super fast.
Great.
Nice job, Azura. And it is actually Headley's turn.
Great. I don't have control of this little character just yet. I'm going to go straight right up against. I'm going to flank.
Flank. They should have him down here. Control. Now there you go.
There. And so now I'm there.
No, you got to get around the other side. You got to be across from Drakeus. That's flanking. You have to be on the opposite. You got to sandwich the creature.
Okay, right here.
Yep. There you go.
Now you're
okay.
good.
Okay.
Awesome.
Good. And I'm going to come down hard.
Okay.
With my short sword.
All right.
Do it.
That's an 18.
18 to hit is...
Plus 2. Did you add the flanking bonus?
Oh, I didn't add the plus 2.
Oh, the 20.
Plus
that's,
2.
That's a
20.
Hit. That's a hit.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Great. Nice.
With the sneak attack. With the
right,
flank.
So now it's 5d6 plus 3.
Yeah.
5d6?
5d6 yeah. plus 4.
One from plus 4. One from your weapon, 4 from your sneak attack. So 5 total d6 plus 4.
Yes, sadly.
Well, that is a 24.
24 points of damage. Dude.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Ooh. This guy's got to be in rough shape.
Yeah, he's in rough shape too. Although that was the first time he was hit, was Drakeus just now. But yeah, he's still pretty.
Oh,
pretty
so that
rough
was
shape.
The guy that was near Azura initially. Okay.
Yeah.
This is getting confusing.
Skid, was my 27 way off from demoralizing? Because I just won't roll again. I technically got another free attempt when I hurt him.
No, actually, you know what? That should have worked. That should have worked last time.
Okay, well...
27 should have worked. That would have been enough.
Should I try on this time, then? See
sure.
if I get it again? Okay. 19 this time.
19 to demoralize this thing, and that is not enough.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Got it.
Okay, so it is the creature's turn. And it vanishes.
Whoa.
And boom, reappears right behind Azura.
Ah!
Ah! And attacks, that is a 24.
Yep.
That's 14 points of damage.
Ah!
The bite. Bites again, misses. Claws. That is another 27.
Sorry, wait. Can it move and do a full attack like that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's part. Yeah. This is a swift action.
Wow, that's so powerful.
Yeah, so that's another 9 points of damage, and then a miss on the second claw. Okay, all right, so it is a new round. It is Colonel Luther's turn.
Okay, one side note here. As I'm digging deeper into spiritual weapon, it doesn't get a flanking bonus, nor does it provide it one. Yeah. First, let me get that out of the way. I'm going to have it move to the hound and strike it.
Okay.
And let's see. Got to be better than a natural one. Barely. That's going to be a 17.
17 is a miss.
17 is a miss. All right. Now it's this Colonel's turn. I just charge at that thing. Yeah, fuck it. Colonel's gonna just charge and swing his flail. Try to bring it down on his head, just like you did Gavo last night. Jeez, love my eights today, but that is gonna be a 20 with the charge.
That's a hit.
Boom, beautiful. Sauce. Been a while since I charged. No bonus to damage on the charge, right?
Just a hit.
Yeah.
And you're minus 2
9
on AC.
9 points of damage, and then, AC drops.
All right, your AC is down after bravely charging in at this thing. And it is Drakeus' turn.
All right, Drakeus is hasted and will be able to move pretty easily. Where is this? Is the spiritual weapon here? I'm guessing directly next to...
I would have slid past Azura.
Or would it be around the back, like here?
I have to remember what horrible name Troy is going by in Roll 20 to give him permission. All right, you should be able to move the flail now, Troy.
Okay. And I had to move for it. So it swings around.
So there's no place for Drakeus to be able to move into flanking, but he'll stand shoulder to shoulder with Colonel Luther. 3 wide with Colonel Luther and a spiritual weapon. I hope this creature's scared. I believe I don't get my extra attack at full attack bonus with haste unless I do a full attack action,
right,
correct?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so this will be a single attack. The natural one.
Oh, man.
No.
Guys.
Oh, no.
Well, you can confirm. You got two attacks
I have multiple
now.
Attacks. Let's see what happens. That is a 20 to confirm with a 4 on the die, so just barely
misses.
That is
not a confirmed fumble. That is not a confirmed fumble. Okay, so it's a miss, just a miss, and it is Azora's turn.
Azura is going to... She is going to take a 5-foot step back, and... Actually, she'll just go straight back. And then she will use a move action to... She'll describe these creatures kind of as you did. And just saying, stay within the invisibility purge. That's the best option, Colonel. They can teleport, but they can be defeated. And she will give you all Inspire Courage.
Awesome.
So, Ari, if you want to add that to your adjustments, it's Bard, Inspire Courage, +2. That'll give you... A +2 to hit and to damage.
Oh, wow.
So that's on there. And then she will just try to attack it with an arrow.
Okay.
It's a long shot, but what the hell. That is a 17, so it doesn't miss.
That's a miss. Okay. All right. But she is able to describe how best to defeat these things, and it is Headley's turn.
Okay. Headley is going to run up. And I'm going to come down with a mighty rage. And I get a +2 to that as well.
Yes.
Yes. So add another +2 on. Yep.
Great. 27.
That is a hit.
27. And then... D6.
Oof.
Plus...
You know what? You should have just taken that extra square to get into flanking. Yeah. Even if it provoked, but... Whatever, it's fine. Just remember, do everything you can to flank, always, because that extra 4d6 damage is amazing.
Yeah.
ABF.
Always be flanking.
So this rolled an 8.
That is a... 8 points of damage. Okay, great.
8 points of damage.
Okay. So kids like
that is a monster. Wait,
what? How'd you do that? Okay, so, boom, a little more peppered... damage in from Headley, and it is the creature's turn, and it's, let's see, and boom, it vanishes, and boom, appears right behind Headley. And starts attacking. First with a bite.
No.
That is a 21 to hit. Yeah, I think that's exactly hit. Okay, so 21 to hit. That is a hit. And that is its bite. That's 13 points of damage.
Got it.
Jeepers.
Bites
man,
again.
These things hit hard, man.
Yeah.
Hits again. Ooh. 12 more points of damage.
Oh.
Claws.
This is getting real.
Natural 20.
Okay. Now we need to be careful.
Oh, no.
And a nat 20 on the confirm.
Oh my God. One more nat 20. Permanently
double
dead.
Criticals.
Oh,
Tanya. Okay.
Natty 8. My sweet Tanya.
My no. sweet Tanya. Tanya.
Okay. So, oof. Okay. 6.
Was that a rule when you were a kid, Joe, or is that like an unwritten
That's
common
an order
rule?
Of the Ember Die rule.
Yeah. 320 is permadeath.
320s is permadeath. Yeah.
So not too bad. 12 points of damage on the claw. And then a final claw, and that's another hit.
Jeez.
And that's 5 more points of damage on Headley. How are you looking, Headley?
Rough
shape.
Yeah. This isn't good.
It's not good. Okay, it is, however, a brand new round. It is Colonel Luther's turn.
Okay, I will direct the spiritual weapon to swoop around let's see how much. Swoop around right next to Drakeus and strike this thing, or attempt to at least. Misses. And now the Colonel's kind of in a shitty position here, but I think I've got the movement. So I'm going to 5, 10, 15, 20, move 20 feet right next to my little flail friend. And hopefully Azura's inspired courage. What did you say, Azura, to get us all fired up?
I said that I've seen these creatures before, and they bleed blood. And with your invisibility purge, we are in a perfect situation to take them out.
Your words were not inspiring, Azura, but your mechanical powers are natural one.
Truly, ooh, they were not inspiring.
I mean, that's 2 for me, and then Grant had 1. This is all over the place.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's no good.
And I only have 1 attack. I think it's next level I get 2 attacks, so okay. I can't even...
What's that old...
Man, we are racking them up today. Brian from Yokohama, Japan.
Hey!
Oh, Yokohama!
Yokohama.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yokohama mamas.
Yeah.
Yokohama. I just died in your arms tonight. You stumble as you swing your weapon, causing you to fall into the arms of your target, who is sadly not your lover but an enemy combatant. Your target can choose to make a free grapple attempt as an immediate action or do nothing, allowing you to fall prone.
All right. Oh, it can't really grapple him. So, yeah, it just like it steps back a little bit and Colonel falls flat on his face at its feet.
Brian,
that's a good
fumble.
Good
Very
fumble.
Good fumble. Nice job, Brian.
I like that.
All right, it is Drakeus's turn. You see the Colonel having slipped and fallen, and you're standing there. You're the only one that can save him.
Drakeus turns to the creature and says, "Sumimasen, but I must kill you." Here comes a full attack from the Drake. First roll is a 29 to hit.
That is a hit.
Dealing 17 points of damage on the first attack.
Okay, it's in very, very bad shape.
The second attack is a 30 to hit.
That's a hit.
For 23 points of damage.
Oh, and describe your alien otherworldly kill.
Nice, Drake!
With a +2 longsword, which in the moment looks like a samurai's katana in the air. In honor of Yokohama, slices the head off of this creature, and the rest of its limbs jut out wildly as blood spews from the neck hole where its head used to be.
We'll see you next time.
Where's the other one? What the hell? What am I missing?
That's a great question. Where's the other one?
He's so right behind creepy. You in your room.
I've been thinking about it all week.
He's in Ari's booth.
What?
Thank you, Ari Rubin.
You're the man.
Yeah, all right.
Come back next week.
Thank you, dude.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I miss this.
Raiders of the Lost Continent is a Glass Cannon Network production. The Glass Cannon is an officially licensed partner of Paizo Incorporated. Ruins of Aslant is copyright 2017. Ruins of Aslant and the Pathfinder Adventure Path are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder images are property of Paizo and are used with permission.